Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults.
And beer.
Tonight, we're continuing the Canada binge with another last-minute addition to it. So far, we've covered Alan Legere, the Quebec Biker War, the Wacko Cult, His Rest Christian Fellowship, Jennifer Pan, with it to conclude with Willie Picton. And we've had Canadian podcasts on with us as well in some of these. We had Buried Motives on Alan Legere and Moms, Wine, and True Crime on the Jennifer Pan case. I was ready to dive into Picton, but I realized a while back my friend Mark from Mental Illness Theater suggested a crazy case. It's like Trailer Park Boys crazy. Like Canada's modern-day drug-fueled Hatfields and McCoys. None other than the Melvins and the Marriotts. Picton is next, unless I find yet another crazy Canadian case with enough time to write the notes before we record again. And joining us on this one is the one and only Morgan Rector from Human Monsters. How's it going, Morgan?
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going?
We're good. We're glad to have you with us. For those of you who don't know, Morgan is the one that indirectly launched Crimes, Killers, Cults, and Beer.
How did I do
that? He made a post asking if anybody had been through anything horrific, and I said, yeah, I was raised in a cult. So Morgan here asked if he could interview me, and I came on with two other survivors of the same cult. I had a blast, and it was right then that I knew I wanted to do a true crime podcast. So 6 months later, Todd and I released The Death of Michael Malloy, which is episode one. And anyway, I'm Bill, and that's Paul, and that's Morgan. So if I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with Human Monsters, but in case that we have any that aren't, go ahead and tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Human Monsters, basically what I do is profile, people who are cruel, inhumane, inhuman. The tagline is, these people specialize in the unthinkable. So it's just very cruel people, psychopaths, sociopaths, and serial killers, child abusers, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and nobody does more research than Morgan. Trust me on this. And your latest episode, Morgan, Goel, what's his name?
Goel Ratzon, yeah.
That episode was insane. It's like we did the His Rest Christian Fellowship cult that nobody had ever heard of, but it's absolutely crazy. Morgan says, hold my beer. Check this out. But it's kind of fitting that we have Morgan on here with us since he was the one that that more or less launched CKCB, because I've made a very interesting discovery over the past 24 hours. We host the podcast on Spotify for podcasters, and their analytics have what percentage of your listeners come from the different platforms. So I thought that the number that they gave you for the actual number of listeners was for all of the platforms, which was fine. They were decent, but I thought maybe they're higher or whatever. Well, I found out that the numbers that Spotify for podcasters shows you is only the numbers for Spotify. That's it. Mm-hmm. So I go into Apple Podcasts and I make a discovery that we're at least double the size that I thought that we were, just bringing in the numbers from Apple, not to mention the numbers from the smaller platforms, and also not to mention the YouTube page, which grows every week. So this podcast is a lot bigger than I thought that it was. And I've also, in my little rabbit hole, discovered we've been on two top 10 lists for podcasts. There's top 10 Florida Men podcasts on FeedSpot, and then Player FM had us in the 100 best of 2024.
Oh, nice.
So hell yeah. It's like that was a very nice surprise.
Oh yeah.
So.
Oh, hey there. You like true crime stories, right? Yeah, I know. Who doesn't? But I gotta admit, after a while, all those stories of murder and heartache, well, they tend to go straight to my hips. So that's why I, Leroy Luna, have created a podcast called Excuse Me, That's Illegal, where we'll take a hardcore look at some softcore crimes. No TED Talks on Bundy here. The letters BTK won't be coming from these lips. Unless he had a brother that used to steal library books. Suppose I'd be willing to go balls deep into that one if that were the case. Anyways, you'll hear stories such as the Mad Pooper, a female jogger who wreaked havoc in a Colorado Springs neighborhood, using one family's front yard as her own personal dumping grounds. If this kind of content sounds like it's up your alley, Excuse Me, That's Illegal, is available right now on all your favorite podcatchers. So come join me. I'll be right here waiting for you.
Anyway, into the case. Morgan, you said you hadn't heard of this one, and you're from Canada as well?
Yeah, I'm actually from Nova Scotia. I lived in the Halifax area briefly when I was like a toddler. So yeah, I was unaware of that case, nor was I aware that there was that much violence in Halifax. But it is a port city, and so it's natural that a lot of drugs come in. And yeah, there are a lot of turf wars. I know someone who actually knew, I think it was Jimmy Melvin Jr.
Okay.
She was a crack dealer for years. So I guess it was inevitable that they would come in contact with each other. But yeah, so I guess I have kind of a 6 degrees of separation connection there.
Well, that's cool. I mean, well, it's not cool that somebody, that a friend of yours knew Jimmy Melvin, but it's a nice little tie-in though.
Mm-hmm.
So the Melvins and the Marriotts are crime families in Spryfield, Nova Scotia, which is near Halifax. There was a generational feud between the families, and their war consisted of bombings, shootings, and kidnappings, and of course, drugs. Feud started in Spryfield, but later spilled into Halifax and surrounding regions. The families actually started off as allies, but turned against each other, resulting in most of them either dead or in prison. But nobody knows what will happen when the current Melvin and Marriott children grow up. You know, will they follow in their ancestors' footsteps and reignite the feud, or will they try and do better? You know, the Hatfields and McCoys buried the hatchet, well, figuratively.
Yeah.
Not in anybody's head. But so will the Melvins and Marriotts? And regardless, the TV show The Trailer Park Boys is shot in Nova Scotia, and these chuckleheads resemble the name.
Yeah. We should cover the Hatfields and McCoys sometime.
Yeah, that would be a good one to cover.
Even though there's enough movies out there about them.
Well, that's movies. We
cool movies.
We talk about facts here. We talk about facts. We don't Hollywoodize anything unless it's a fake episode like on Dust Bowl Killer.
Yeah.
There's lots of sources that I used to put this episode together, including CDC News, Vice.com, Yahoo News, Saltwire.com, and MapIncorporated.com. So, The war started in the early 2000s, but the two families were involved in shady dealings for years prior. Terry Marriott Sr. and Jimmy Melvin Sr. were the heads of the respective families. Terry Marriott's history began in 1966 when he was 17 years old. He was running drugs with his brothers Ricky and Billy. Billy was a hangaround with the Hells Angels after becoming friends with the Hells Angels member Neil Smith while the two were in jail together. So right off the bat, we're talking about Canadian bikers again for the third time in this binge. Because remember, they came up at the end of the cult episode. Yeah, it's like we were speculating that Ricky might have been part of the Quebec biker war, and which I think that he was. So at least the timeline matches up.
Well, it's always a mistake to go for the one shot deal, the huge gross of drugs at one time, because you get caught with that, you're going away for a long time. But that's what these guys were doing, rather than just selling small amounts at a time and establishing a steady revenue stream.
Yeah, they also got released an awful lot too, which is something that is kind of weird to me. But After that, after what happened in that cult episode, nothing surprises me about Canadian justice.
That was horrible.
I mean, I was not right for several days after we did that. But
yeah.
And speaking of that, I mentioned Mark of Mental Illness Theater. They're currently doing a multi-part series about the 2020 Nova Scotia massacres. It's really good, and it takes place near where this story takes place. So you definitely want to check that one out too.
Oh yeah. After you finish listening to this episode.
Of course. Terry Marriott was in and out of jail until in 1998 when he got arrested and tried for the murder of a man named Arnold Joseph Bailey. A witness testified that Terry and Bailey had gone to rip off drugs from a boxer, Donald Downey, and this went bad, and then Terry shot Bailey in the back of the head. That's kind of weird. Okay, Bailey went with you to go rough up this boxer, but you're going to shoot Bailey in the head? Meanwhile, you got a pissed off boxer. I don't know. By the way, I hope Mike Tyson destroys, what is it? Jake Logan, Logan Paul, whatever.
Yeah, Logan Paul.
Yeah, I hope Mike Tyson. Anyway, yeah. leading up to the trial, the witness himself was arrested for murder, and Terry wound up being acquitted. And Downey was later shot and killed when he answered his door by somebody wearing a Halloween mask. I wonder if it was made by Silver Shamrock.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe.
Silver Shamrock. But this killer was never found, but I'm pretty sure it was somebody in the Marriott clan. But maybe Terry himself.
Yeah.
But Terry would continue his drug running into the 90s with Ricky and Billy as his top people. And in the mid-90s, his son, Terry Marriott Jr., would join the family business as well. But a car accident would cripple Ricky, but he was still getting fights, and he'd have his associates knock his opponent to the ground, and then he'd run him over with his wheelchair.
Yeah.
Like, hey, get him down there, boys. Get him. All right, hold on.
You'd have to be going really fast in order to run over somebody with a wheelchair.
Oh, yeah. Unless he's got one of those super ECVs.
Well, the power chairs go pretty fast, so that could have been it.
That could have been what they used. Yeah. They had the money for it. In the 90s, Jimmy Melvin Sr. had become a fixture in the Nova Scotia drug trade, and apparently hanging around with the Halifax Hells Angels paid off, but he was convicted after three major drug busts. He was involved with a shipment of 26 tons of hash. This has me wondering just how easy it is to move enormous amounts of drugs in Canada.
Well, like I said, it's a port city, so stuff's being imported all the time. And so, yeah, if you can take a boat in there and, you can smuggle stuff in.
Well, Salvador Cazetta of Rock Machine and the Quebec Biker War story, he was busted with 20 tons of cocaine.
Shit.
Yeah. Yep.
But that was in Montreal.
Well, the thing is too, those huge boats with the shipping containers, these guys who work for those importing companies that have admitted that they don't check every shipping container. They just don't have the time, and they'd have to be thorough as well, and they just don't. So a lot of stuff gets through that probably shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, those shipping containers, I mean, those ships are loaded down with like hundreds of those shipping containers. It would take a week to go through every single one of them just for one ship.
Yeah, so. They don't. Yeah.
So I get it. But in 1994, he was sentenced to 8 years in prison for conspiracy to smuggle hashish. And during the trial, he was linked to a 1992 incident where a ship carrying $20 million worth of cocaine was sunk after a 19-hour pursuit by the U.S. Coast Guard.
Oh.
It sank off of Newfoundland, and he had been trying to salvage cocaine from the wreck and get it to the intended buyers, who, of course, were the Hell's Angels.
Uh-huh.
And before that, In 1991, he was linked to 3.5 tons of hash seized by police from a truck and a bust. He didn't serve all of his sentence, apparently, because in 2001, he was arrested in a drug bust on the Hells Angels. And this was during the biker war. I didn't know getting into this that these two cases were connected. He was sentenced to 6 years for selling hash, and but he was released in 2006, so he only did 5 years.
Hmm.
Now we're moving back to the Marriotts, kinda. 1997, two men, Robert McFarlane and William St. Clair Windelborg, tried to cash in on the weakness of the Halifax Hells Angels. And they decided to encroach on the territory, starting by muscling a gay club called Reflections Cabaret. It was also an after-hours drug den, and they were threatening its owner, Paul Wilson, and his family. Wilson had a record, and he was connected to the Hells Angels through his friends, David Wolf Carroll, who was a fully patched Hells Angel member. And he helped Wilson score the drugs. Obviously, the Hells Angels didn't take too kindly to that. And McFarlane was gunned down by two members of the Hells Angel from the Montreal chapter that had been sent by Maurice Boucher to try and help bolster the Halifax Hells Angel chapter. Maurice is now in two of our episodes.
Yeah.
Windelborg disappeared. Disappeared around the same time, but his decomposed body was found in 1998 in the woods. The autopsy revealed that he had been badly beaten and forced to overdose on cocaine. Great. That's rough.
Mm.
Paul Wilson was charged with organizing the hit on McFarlane. And before his trial in 2004, the Hells Angel member who had carried out that hit died under mysterious circumstances.
Hmm. Well, thus far, how does this relate to the Marriott?
I'm getting there. I'm getting there right now.
Tick-tock.
Paul Wilson hired Billy Marriott and an associate to kill Windelborg. And they lured Windelborg to Marriott's house, supposedly to buy drugs from him. And he was beaten with a baseball bat and then tied to a chair, then injected with a lethal dose of cocaine and then dumped in the woods. I'm not a druggie, never have been, but cocaine isn't a drug that you inject.
Not that I know of.
So it's like injecting that would probably be a lot worse than snorting the exact same dose, I would assume.
Well, I guess they made him snort it until he was dead. So
could be, or I was the way that it was mentioned in the source was I thought that they had just mainlined it, but which is why I was like, okay, well, I've never really heard of that being done intravenously, but whatever. I'm not a druggie, but. Billy was then found at the scene of his brother Ricky and his wife's double murder. And Ricky had been shot in the temple and his wife in the chest. And Billy claimed he found him like this, but police said that the way that the bodies were found, it looked like they had been shot by somebody that they trusted.
Mm.
Because Ricky was at a table and his wife was at the was just sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
And they suspected Billy, but there was no proof. And Billy was later arrested and charged with Windelborg's murder. but before he went to trial, he was found dead in his cell. Yeah, he had offed himself. He had hung himself. Billy's common law wife, Wanda Campbell, was convicted for her involvement in the murder for cleaning up the blood. And there is some merit to the police's theory that Billy had killed Ricky and his wife. because Terry Marriott Sr. Thought that he had done it too, but I couldn't find any reasons as to why.
Hmm.
But if Terry Sr. thought that, then, you know, I don't know, maybe Billy ratted somebody out. Who knows? Or Ricky. Maybe Ricky ratted. Maybe Ricky ratted somebody out. There. That's what I meant. But this set the stage for Terry Marriott Sr. to bring his son Terry Jr. into the family business. 1999, Terry Marriott Sr. and Jr. were arrested in Operation Crackpot, which targeted street-level crack houses. Did I say 89 or 99?
I don't know.
It was 99. Senior got 4 years for trafficking, and Junior got 7 years for possession, but he got paroled after 4.5.
Hmm.
Part of his parole, he was ordered to stay away from his father, and that didn't go very well, obviously.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to groom my son to take over for me when I'm gone if he can't come near me?
Right.
And how dare these criminals, you know, not do what we said? What are they, criminals or something?
I don't know. I can't do a Canadian accent. So, but these people are compared to the Trailer Park Boys, so I'll just use my Pee Wee Gaskins voice. During the 90s, the Hells Angels were controlling the majority of Nova Scotia's drug trade. And by the end of the biker war, Halifax Police Department had started Operation Hammer to take out the Halifax Hells Angel chapter permanently. And they permanently shut down the clubhouse. So when with the Melvin and Marriott leaders in jail and the Hells Angels in Halifax broken up, and some of the Halifax Hells Angel members likely went to Montreal after that, but there was a power vacuum on the streets, so the younger members of both families took over. They even paired up in a partnership at one point. What could go wrong?
Right.
2002, BJ Marriott was arrested and convicted of murder. And he had killed a man outside the Copper Penny Tavern in Halifax. And Jimmy Melvin Jr. was also in prison on cocaine smuggling charges. While in prison, the pair started a large drug operation. And the way it worked is BJ would call his mother on the phone from prison, and then she would three-way call a crack house manager, Bruce Jackson, and bring him in. And that's how they were able to coordinate.
Wow.
The first part, that was the first major operation that the joint crime family had put together. And the other siblings of the families were running drugs and operating crack houses and smuggling drugs into the prison for BJ and Jimmy to sell. These drugs were brought in by an associate who had them up his ass. You see, oh, you got a visitor here, Jimmy. Why do your visitors always have to go take a shit before they come see you? But one of the workers on the outside became a rat, and wiretaps and undercover police work uncovered the fact that BJ and Gary Boo Boudreau, who was a Marriott family associate, and Jimmy Buffin Jr. were the heads of this operation and were running it from the prison.
So don't the Canadians, law enforcement in general, ever monitor the inmates' phone calls?
You think
that would
know.
Be normal?
I would imagine normal. They would. Yeah. Maybe they were talking in code or something.
Yeah.
Could be. To do that.
Yeah, it'd be really nice if I could get 6 pepperoni pizzas up in here.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, that if they're bringing in pizza in the ass, I don't think anybody's going to want that pizza.
No. Not on that block.
Yeah. But I was wondering that too. It's just like, okay, they're on the phone, but the phone calls have got to be monitored. But yeah, they probably were talking in code. But later in 2002, the police started Operation Midway, which resulted in 80 arrests, including the mothers of BJ Marriott and Jimmy Melvin Jr. They got their moms. This seriously weakened the operation, which naturally caused friction between the Melvins and Marriotts. The feud started shortly after. Although nobody knows exactly what started it, we do know that it wasn't started over a stolen pick. The most widely accepted reason was supposedly that BJ Marriott had called Jimmy Melvin Jr. on the phone, and Jimmy Sr. had been released from prison around this time, and BJ told Jr. that Sr. had been released because he had ratted. Jr. told BJ that if he could produce evidence that Sr. had ratted, he would never talk to Sr. again. BJ, of course, did not produce such, you know, said evidence, which, of course, pissed Jr. off. Word got around to the families outside of prison, and the younger members began saber rattling, which led to the square offs, which led to war. It's just a bunch of. It seems like this whole thing started over, you know, basically, you know, a yo mama joke. Your mama's so fat, she's choked on a rat. I don't know. But October 25th of 2002, a property owned by Jimmy Sr. was attacked by a Marriott associate, Wayne Robinson. That lit the fuse, officially starting the war, or the Spryfield murders, as the media would call it. Before too long, the names of both family members would be household names, you know, thanks to the press. Kind of like John Gotti was in the news constantly, but these groups weren't celebrities because nobody liked them. John Gotti had charisma. The Melvins and Marriotts had gap tooth, you know, with, I got nothing. Sometimes they come to me, sometimes they don't.
Well, rednecks, yeah. Urban rednecks, I guess you could say.
Yeah. It's like these country singers today that talk about working a farm. They've never been on a farm in their life. But June 2006, both Melvins, Jr. and Sr., were released from prison. And this is a head scratcher for me, because why would they be released early when there is a war going on? You know, between the two families, and you're gonna, you know, you're gonna release the two, you know, the two heads of one of the factions. I don't know.
Their sentence
hadn't ended. They were paroled.
Yeah.
So why? Everybody knows that the war is going on, the Hatfields and McCoy-esque war, but yeah. So let's just release doesn't make any sense to me.
I figured it would probably, well, I'll let them go, let them kill themselves.
Could be.
Release the hounds.
That same month, 21-year-old Wayne Marriott was killed in a drive-by shooting. This was in retaliation for an altercation that he had with Corey Melvin. Wayne had shot Corey in the hand, and Wayne had done time for drug trafficking, and he was the first cousin of BJ and Terry Marriott Jr. Jimmy Melvin Jr. was labeled a person of interest by the police, and the police put out wanted posters with his face on it. He was wanted for questioning. He was not a suspect. But the next day, the Marriotts firebombed a payday loan building, which was owned by Jimmy Melvin Sr. And the next day, the you know, BJ Marriott's parents' home was shot up. And why does it not surprise me that the Melvins owned a check cashing place?
Yeah.
A payday loan place.
Money laundering.
Yeah. That's probably exactly what it was.
Yeah. Money's everywhere. Can't hide it.
But if it's owned by the Melvins, they're not gonna they're not just gonna call you and all of your references or anything like that. They'll come kneecap you.
Yeah.
But there were no casualties at BJ's parents' house. But now Jimmy Melvin Jr. was wanted as a suspect for the murder of Wayne Marriott, and for the shooting for the shooting of the house. They found Jimmy and they imposed a pretrial curfew on him. This is my favorite part of the story. Oh man. One day he violated curfew, which sent the police on a massive search. They deemed Jimmy as armed and dangerous, and they were questioning anybody who even resembled Jimmy, when you would think that they already know what Jimmy looks like, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
He's been in jail a lot. But one night, I love this part. One night there was a bar brawl and the police arrested everybody involved, and Jimmy was among them.
Hmm.
He gave them a fake name and a fake ID and said that he didn't have his ID. He gave him a fake name and a fake ID. You know, knowing that the police would eventually figure out who he was, Jimmy told the police that he knew where Jimmy Melvin Jr. was and that he would take him to him if they agreed to let him go. The police accepted the terms, and they drove around town for hours with Jimmy, with them, not knowing that it was Jimmy, looking for Jimmy. And then they gave up and let him go. It's like, well, we appreciate you trying there, eh?
Yeah.
you know, that guy looked a lot like Jimmy Melvin, don't you think? Yeah, I don't think the captain's gonna you know, have anything nice to say about that.
So how was that accent there, Morgan? Was that good, or should I just not try to do Canadian accent?
Well, you're on the right track. Have you seen Trailer Park Boys?
I've actually never seen an episode of that.
All right, well, if you see it, Bubbles has the most authentic Maritimer accent. So they probably talked like him. So
I'll have to check that out. I probably should have watched a couple episodes before we did this. but you know, huh?
One of the lead characters is named Ricky too. So
wow.
Yeah.
But I really didn't have time. I mean, you know what time it was last night when I sent you the notes, Morgan. That's what time I got done with them.
Yeah.
So, but I saw one report that spun a different story. Jimmy had gotten a hold of a police uniform and was looking for himself for hours and then ditched. And the police eventually realized that they didn't know that officer.
I don't know which version I like better.
Me either. <Yeah. laughs> But joining us right now with his unique commentary on this situation is our old friend Dick Darwin, Dallas detective.
Ooh. Hello, everybody. Dick Darwin here, Dallas detective. I have dealt with my fair share of drug dealers in my time on the Dallas police force, and I have to say that I do approve of the peace pledge that they signed Jimmy Melvin Jr. to. And as you know, I endorse the Pinky Promise Release Program, and this is a similar proposition, and it enrages me when a criminal violates it. But in regards to Jimmy Jr. going along with the police department to find himself, I don't think that the Halifax Police Department had anything to be embarrassed about. In fact, I believe that they knew all along that it actually was Jimmy. You see, they were letting him think that he was getting over on them, giving him a false sense of security. That way, you'd be more likely to make a mistake, you see? He, in his overconfidence, would inadvertently cause him to lead the police to every single one of his associates in crack houses. And once they knew where they were, they could set up stakeouts and catch the criminals in the act. Before too long, Jimmy would have no one to do business with, and he would eventually just turn himself in. You know, because he was bored. So even though it didn't work out that way, I admire the strategy. It reminds me of a case that I worked. It was a serial killer named Henry. We'd take him out to get ice cream and give him cigarettes, and being nice to him jogged his memory and helped us solve dozens of cold cases. So raise him up for the Halifax PD. I salute you. Thanks again for having me on your show. Dick Darwin, Dallas Detective, signing off.
Thanks, Dick.
Yeah, Dick.
Man, I put that in the wrong place. It was talking about something that happens later on, but the peace pledge, but we'll get there. Jimmy was arrested 9 days later. Henry Lee Lucas part. It's just Morgan, Dick Darwin is a character that I came up with, and he's just like the embodiment of a bad police officer.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah,
like a corrupt police officer.
Well, I don't think he's corrupt per se. He's just a dumbass.
Like Barney Fife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Barney Fife from Texas. So, Jimmy was arrested 9 days later, and after a 6-hour-long standoff in a motel. And I have to think that this would have had to have been one of the most personally satisfying arrests that a criminal ever had. It's like, you got me, but you had me for 6 hours a week and a half ago. Oh, man. He was back in prison, and the back and forth firebombings between the two families continued. Jimmy was never charged for Wayne Marriott's murder, but Corey Melvin and another sibling pleaded guilty to some of the firebombings. Jimmy spent 2 years in jail waiting for the trial for a home invasion that he had been charged with. But come time for the trial, two witnesses backed out, and he was released yet again in 2008. When he was released, he shouted, what?
Hallelujah, I'm looking forward to a nice cold beer.
Yeah. In typical Melvin fashion, the violence escalated in the weeks following his release. Shortly later, there was an attempt on Jimmy Melvin Sr., and he was shot in a drive-by shooting while standing outside of a pizza restaurant. He survived, but later, Junior was being interviewed by a reporter about the attempt on his dad, and he yelled,
there is no rats in the Melvin family.
He got it into his car, and then he yelled,
death before dishonor.
The next day, Jimmy's bestie, Jason Hallett, was attacked outside of the children's hospital. He had just been there to see his newborn baby, and he survived. He survived.
I've been in the hospital.
I'm sorry?
The Isaac Walton Killian, I've been in that hospital.
Oh, really?
So that resonates with me here.
Yeah, but I don't want anybody to be killed after they just saw their baby. That's kind of messed up. At least wait till he gets a mile or two away. But Jason survived for the third time. This was a third attempt on Jason. Then the Marriotts are apparently graduates of the Imperial Stormtrooper Shooting Academy. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
The same day, a couple weeks later, Jimmy Jr. was shot by Jamie LeBlanc. And he had been friends with Jimmy Jr. before the feuds, but sided with the Marriotts once the war began. Dick traitor.
Yeah.
He was actually in the car when Wayne Marriott was killed. And police actually got LeBlanc on a recording discussing the attack. He was arrested and convicted and sentenced to 28 years. It later came out that the person who had pulled the trigger in this murder was 18-year-old Aaron Marriott, and he pleaded guilty and got 15 years.
Damn, 15, or, yeah, 18, jeez.
Yeah. February of 2009, Terry Marriott Jr. was murdered while passed out on the couch at a friend's house after a night of hardcore partying. He had gotten his ass kicked at a strip club. And there were five people at the house at the time after the strip club incident. And not one of them had any clue on who done it, how they done it, and what they done it with. And he was partying hard, too, because alcohol, ecstasy, cocaine, and Valium were all found in his blood. If the bullets didn't kill him, the drugs, that drug combination would have.
Yeah.
This story went crazy on local message board with trolls doing troll things, and it kicked into high gear when somebody claiming to be Terry's daughter posted, "Take it, Paul."
These families are causing trouble. I'm pretty sure my dad was trying to get out of this life. Just nobody could get that through their head. He's been trying to be the perfect dad, but looks like he can't do that either. That same fuckhead did what he did. What did what they did? Gonna have a problem? Damn. That's messed up. Rest in peace, Dad.
You left out Hala.
Yeah.
that's BTK-esque grammar right there.
Hala.
Yeah.
Morgan, on our BTK series, man, I really go at BTK hard. I mean, like haikus done in 3-6-3 format.
Yeah, he's an idiot. Yeah.
But Jimmy Jr. claiming to be the brother of a Marriott friend. Now this is weird. He posted this. Take it, Paul.
Terry was trying to change. It's hard when you grow up in a lifestyle that he grew up in, but he was the greatest dad. Some people have to play with what they have been dealt with. It's sad but true. So far, all you people are out there mouthing about crime. This had bad, this and bad that. Yeah. About crime. This and bad that. Go back into your little house with your white picket fence and shut up. Because you think you know, but you really don't know the half of it. Rip Terry. Wait, was it?
All right,
rest in peace. Oh, yeah. Rest in peace, Terry and Wayne. Little sis. We'll love you forever, bro. Bro. Holla.
Eh? I don't know why Jimmy Jr. would have done that. You were proposing to be somebody just trying to stir the pot or whatever, because it's, talking in the Marriott's benefit or on his Marriott's behalf. Doesn't make any sense to me. But whatever. I used to go to war on message boards myself back in the day. Back in like the mid 2000s,
AOL.
Yeah, AOL.
Yahoo chats.
They were all over the place.
ASL.
Yeah. ASL. That means something different now. Was it? What? I can't remember what it is now.
No.
Yeah, I heard that it means something else now. It doesn't mean age, sex, and location anymore. It just means it, but there's some other, something else now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something that the TikTok kids use. Yeah. Get off my lawn. Oh, Terry Sr. at that point was trying to go legit, but like Michael Corleone, just when he thought he was out, they pulled him back in. But after Terry Jr.'s death, the police raided one of the crack houses and found Terry Sr. there, and they also found 28 grams of cocaine. Terry Sr. was charged with possession for the purpose of trafficking. Hmm. 28 grams? It's not exactly cartel amounts.
No.
His attorney said that he hadn't done anything illegal since 1998, and he had simply gone to the crack house hoping to get information on Terry Jr.'s murder. Makes sense. Probably not true, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, the attorney asked for house arrest, but the judge sentenced him to 2 years. Jimmy Melvin Jr. figured that he had done all there was to do in crime, and he was getting bored. So he started a website called RealLiveStreetShit.com. Don't look for it. It's not. It's been taken down. But it linked a YouTube page, which has also been taken down, but where he's made videos of himself telling stories about his run-ins with the law. He posted articles about him, and he posted videos of him showing off his injuries and posing with weapons, as well as one sitting in a recliner with money all around him on the floor. And he boasts, "Take it, Paul.
Who wants to get rich or die? I know I ain't dying, and I'm rich."
Hey, you go there, boy. One gunshot wound that he has sustained got him a colostomy bag. And he showed it off like it was some kind of white trash underworld status symbol, stating that he was what?
The cock of the walk, king of the talk.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. You know, I saw screenshots from that video where he's showing off the colostomy bag. He's just sitting there in a pair of tighty whities showing it off.
Strange.
Yeah. But I'm surprised he actually did that, because that seems like something that some poser white boy wannabe gangster douchebag would do. That doesn't, you know, he wasn't a poser. He was the real deal.
Yeah.
So why, you know, that doesn't that seem like something that, you know, you would see somebody with like, you know, two $20 bills and like 10 ones going, "I'm rich," you know? Some douchebag, but he was the real deal. So why do all this?
Yeah.
But he wound up taking the site down because police were taking great interest in what he had to say. And if it sounded like I was giving him props there by saying he wasn't a poser, I'm not. I'm just stating the fact. He wasn't a poser. He was a gangster.
Yeah.
2010, a man told police that he had been kidnapped at gunpoint and taken away in a car. A kidnapper was grilling him for information, and it doesn't say what the information was. He escaped when the car crashed, but later he was caught by three people and beaten badly. One of the attackers was Jimmy Melvin Jr. And police actually caught this assault in progress, and the three men, including Jimmy, were arrested. Jimmy got 3 years in prison. While in prison, he would get into fights, and he would accost prison guards by spitting on them. He would throw shit at them, and on one occasion, he hit a guard in the head with a banana. Hey, man, I got PTSD. I grew up as, you know, I was a prison guard for 10 years, but I've seen a lot of stuff. But one thing I wasn't ready for was the time I was assaulted with a banana, man. I had to retire after that because it was too much.
I just wasn't right.
No, I just wasn't right after that, man. I mean, it wasn't one of those overly ripe bananas that are soft and have the black spots all over them. This one was bright yellow, and it was as hard as a cinder block, man. And you laugh, but man, I'm telling you, if you get hit in the head with a not quite ripe banana, that's going to leave a mark.
In the face.
And you don't want to know what he said when he was hitting me with that banana either. Oh, God. I like this story. I thank you, Mark, for sending this or for suggesting this one to me. Thank you. In July of 2015, police raided an apartment with a search warrant, and the warrant was for stolen goods. Jimmy Jr. was on the scene, and he fled to the top of the building, and he's telling the cops that he wouldn't come down because he was afraid that the cops would shoot him. There was a standoff for over 90 minutes before Jimmy came down and was arrested. He was released the next day on $1,000 bail, and there's pictures of Jimmy on top of the apartment building. It's like a three-story apartment building. And he's just up on the top of it. And
I ain't coming down. I got a banana. I ain't afraid to use it.
Terry Marriott Jr.'s murder was still unsolved. Now remember, there were five people in the house that who didn't see nothing. But the Crown was able to strike a deal with a man named Derek McPhee in 2015. He was a criminal, and he was friends with both the Marriotts and the Melvins. He said that he had driven Jimmy Jr., not in a car, not in a truck, but on a four-wheeler, to the house where Terry Jr. had passed out. He said that Jimmy Jr. had a .357 Magnum and that he had a .38. He said that Jimmy Jr. had beef with Terry Jr. and was, you know, and that had gone back to childhood. He was constantly talking about killing Terry. And he said that the beef started when they were kids and Terry was always picking on Jimmy. Poor Jimmy. You know, Melvins have feelings. But he said that Jimmy fired five shots into Terry while he was asleep, and the only way that the police would find the gun is if they went scuba diving.
Wow.
He had thrown it into Halifax Harbor. And Jimmy was arrested in 2015 and charged with the murder. And when his vehicle was searched, they found weed, cocaine, and lots of pills. Just 2 days later, Terry Marriott Sr. was arrested on drug charges once again. Thought he wasn't doing anything. He was just there looking for information about his son getting killed.
Yeah.
But this time he got 4 years. In 2017, Jimmy Melvin Jr. was found guilty of attempted murder and conspiracy to commit murder. And he beat the first-degree murder charge because his attorney was able to discredit a witness. The witness was Derek McPhee, and Jimmy's attorney was able to put suspicion on him being the murderer, and he only blamed Jimmy in order to get his own charges dropped. Jimmy Melvin apparently had a good attorney.
Yeah.
But this is where we get into that that peace deal that Dick Darwin was talking about. I should have put that one in after this section rather than before. But oh well, you get the point. The Crown labeled Jimmy as a dangerous offender because of the 60 convictions on him since 1994. Jimmy had gotten violent in court and even attacked an inmate in jail, which put the inmate into a coma. In 2021, Jimmy was sentenced to prison for an indefinite amount of time, and the parole board will review his case in 2028 and every 2 years after that. And Jimmy claims he was wrongfully convicted because of his reputation, and I got that wrong about Jimmy didn't have the peace deal. Yeah. Oops. Dick Darwin got something wrong.
Oh.
It happens. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning when I did that Dick Darwin this morning. But BJ Marriott was released from prison in October 2018 after 16 years for manslaughter, conspiracy to smuggle cocaine into the jail, and possession of cocaine for trafficking. He was still considered a high risk to reoffend, so he signed a 2-year peace bond with the police, stipulating that he won't leave Nova Scotia or do anything illegal. That sounds like the Pinky Promise release program to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dick Darwin was saying.
Yeah.
Morgan, the Pinky Promise release program was like when, you know, they released Carl Panzram for the day, as long as he came back at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, there was Lester, Lester something or other. Yeah, they did that one on him too. The Pinky Promise release program, but Lester Eubanks, that's who it was. But
Some criminals have the gift of gab, and they can talk their way into it.
Yeah. But where was I? Lost my place. Damn it. Okay. Yeah, he wouldn't leave Nova Scotia or do anything illegal. But BJ Marriott was a lot of things, but intelligence wasn't one of them. He assaulted two off-duty cops at a strip club in Montreal. He was obviously going back to prison for that, and I'm wondering if he knew that those men were cops. You know, if he did, that's just plain stupid. You know, because what do you think is going to happen to you, you idiot?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that he didn't know that they were cops. But this is the Marriotts we're talking about.
While
in prison, he attacked an inmate, 46-year-old Steven Anderson, literally 30 minutes after Anderson arrived at the facility. Like, welcome to prison. Here's your beatdown. He was also given an indefinite sentence like Jimmy Jr. Terry Marriott Sr. died of natural causes in February of 2020, and if he had held on for just two more months, he could have died of COVID.
Shit, right?
He had just been released from prison when he died. He was 70 years old when he died, and at that time, he had spent 32 years of his life behind bars.
Yeah. Oh, I guess he didn't want to wait till COVID because he probably realized it would have been a wrongful death.
But two generations of Marriotts and Melvins had been at each other's throats, and most of the key players are dead or locked up, and it remains to be seen if a third generation is going to rekindle the feud. And I couldn't find anything saying that they're still involved in criminal activity, but there are lots of Marriotts and Melvins still running around Nova Scotia. And Corey Melvin and BJ Marriott are possibly scheduled to be released soon. So we'll have to wait and see. BJ Marriott is labeled a dangerous offender, and his case comes up for review in June of this year, 2024.
Yeah. That's only a couple months away.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that one went quick.
Yeah.
It's like one of the shortest episodes we've ever done.
Well, that dangerous offender status, when you get that, you're unlikely to ever be released. You know, it's just like with Paul Bernardo, was he got that designation and he's never getting out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's it. You know, you're screwed.
So it's basically like life in prison without parole in the U.S.
Yeah, you can still end up being eligible for parole, but if they see the dangerous offender designation, you're not likely to be paroled. So it's a real big stain on your record for sure. Yeah.
So Bernardo's still in prison?
He's never being released. He had a parole hearing. I don't know, it was maybe a couple of years ago or something, and yeah, he didn't get out. And he never will. He's turning 60 this year. But yeah, he's going to die in there, old man.
Well, we have, you know, the next part of this Canada binge that we've been on. The reason we did that is because, you know, in the 2 years that we've done, we had only done one Canadian episode, and that was Luca Magnotta, and that was episode 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, like, but we've done like 3 or 4 Australian cases. We've done several, you know, a couple German cases. We were snubbing Canada, and not intentionally, it just kind of happened that way. So it's like, you know what? We're just going to go on a Canada binge for a couple months.
Yeah. We've got some crime for you. That's for sure.
Yeah. And finding that cult one, that was luck. That was, yeah, we're the only podcast that's covered that. And like I was telling you, I want more podcasts to cover that one because some of these people are still alive and they need to be known. The next one we have coming up, we're going back to that dangerous offender thing. Next one we have coming up is Willie Picton. And why wasn't he given a dangerous offender rating, because there's talk that he could be released next year.
Well, I don't know. It was never really proven that he killed as many women as they said he did, because they couldn't find a lot of the bodies. They suspected that he ground them up and sold them to meat wholesalers. But again, that wasn't proven either. They know for sure he killed a couple of women, but as for the rest, they just haven't found the evidence.
But I don't think, I mean, he's going to be up for parole next year or the year after, but I don't think he's going to get out either.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Because that man was sick. And yeah, that's going to probably be a 3-part episode. So that'll wrap up the Canada binge with like 6 stories and like 8 episodes. So two months of Canada.
Nice.
So Canada, I want Canada to be our number 2 market. Right now it's the UK. On Spotify, it's the UK. It's our number 2. And on Apple, our number 2 market is Australia.
Mm. Yeah, my number 2 is Canada. Yeah.
Yeah, we need Canada to be our number 2. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to have Canadian podcasters on as guests during this. So, you know, it worked out. This is actually Paul's first collab with another true crime podcaster.
Because
he wasn't on the, you know, he wasn't able to be on some of the other. He's a busy man. He's a member of the National Guard, and he has his own podcast. So, you know, sometimes he's not going to be able to do it, which is why it's good that I'm friends with as many podcasters as I am.
For the National Guard, have you seen any action?
I might come close. Not sure yet. I was going to put my hand up on a couple occasions, but with some of the actual work that's going on with my other job that actually pays, we've got a couple groups. A couple of my guys already landed in Eagles Pass. So, So group going May 1st and June 1st.
So we got to double up on some episodes so I can release content every week that you're gone, like we did before. that's the story of the Melvins and the Marriotts. And, you know, I love the fact that it tied to the biker war episode. You know, that was like really cool. And thanks again, Mark from Mental Illness Theater for, you know, recommending that one to me, and thanks Morgan for coming on.
Yeah, man.
Honored to have my, you know, the person that was responsible for this craziness that is CKCB. So if you don't like it, it's his fault. No, I'm kidding. So,
but thank you.
Anyway, thanks a lot for listening. We appreciate the hell out of it. And be sure to like, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Leave comments on Apple and on YouTube. You know, do all that stuff. If, you know, the podcast is a lot bigger than I thought that it was, and that's freaking awesome for me, because, you know, it's just cool. I've been doing this for 2 years, and just to find out accidentally that, hey, your podcast is more than double the size that you thought it was. Like, hell yeah. So
that's what's cool about every now and then just Googling.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had to figure out how to get into the podcaster access page for Apple.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to bother doing any of the other ones, because like 2%, 4%, like iHeart has like 4% of our audience. So it's like, okay, so Spotify's this, Apple's this. That might mean we get 10 listens a month off of iHeart or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. not even 10. Maybe 2. Wow. I don't know. Or maybe 20. I don't know. But still, I'm not going to bother trying to figure those out. The two big ones are Spotify and Apple, and, you know, in becoming YouTube. YouTube, that's growing every week. So
yeah, now that Google Podcast is now, they're merging. It's no longer going to be Google Podcast. It's just going to be YouTube.
Oh, it's already gone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But Morgan, have you used YouTube?
Yeah, I got over 31,000 subscribers.
Sweet.
Damn. Sweet. Yeah.
I've been monetizing it, so that's going well.
Yeah, I'm a lot closer to monetization now than I thought that I was. But I've still got a little ways to go.
Yeah, on YouTube you have to have like 1,000 or more subscribers to start monetizing it.
Well, I'm going to be sure to hashtag human monsters on these episodes for YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, actually, on YouTube it's known, the account name is Leader One Studios.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Nice.
So anyway, wrapping it up, if you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us, tell an enemy. And if you haven't listened to Human Monsters, definitely check them out because they're really good. And until next week, later.
Later.
Goodbye.